good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News and Focus program. It is Thursday afternoon, and the entire pastoral staff of Berean consists of two individuals today. Bill is doing some reserve duty. Steve is trying to get our alarm system fixed. David is on vacation. Brian's down at Camp Anchorage. And John is on vacation. Congratulations to John and the birth of his first grandson. And they're down at the beach. So, Joey, what did you find for us to take a look at today?
Well, from Sermon Audio, they had this posted from CNSNews.com, and it is entitled, Administration, Obama Administration Official on Illegal Aliens, Jesus Was a Refugee. And I thought it would be a good opportunity for us to talk about the issue that we have going on right now at our borders, plus how these liberal, I guess we'll call them theologians and politicians, like to exploit Jesus for their own political gain. And kind of discuss both of those things within this article.
Yeah, I mean, you always got to get Jesus on your side, Joey. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you don't win if Jesus isn't on your side. So Jesus is for gay marriage, and Jesus is for my Daisy shorts, and Jesus is a refugee, and Jesus is my homeboy. Mm-hmm. I mean, and yet people deny the historical existence of the man. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's funny. Every major world religion does something with Jesus. Buddhism does something with Jesus. Hinduism does something with Jesus. Islam does something with Jesus. Mormonism, I mean, they have to figure something out with Jesus because he's so big that you can't ignore him. You're an idiot if you ignore that he exists.
Right. If you talk to a Mormon, I watched a YouTube clip for a moment on Sermon Audio. Mormons believe they're fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, they're fully convinced that you're not going to get a Mormon to think that he's not a follower of Christ. And you're right. That's a legitimate apologetic.
It is.
What do you do with the fact that this man, born of the city of Bethlehem, grew up a carpenter's son, died prematurely around the age of 33, has had a global impact for 2,000 years.
Yeah, and everybody does something with his teachings. He was a prophet. He was a great teacher. We're not going to dismiss him out of hand because he's too big.
You can't do that.
No.
You legitimately can't do that. But we do find it ironic, though, that there isn't anyone else in that category.
No. No, we as Christians aren't trying to figure out what to do with Buddha or the Hindu god.
Or Muhammad.
No, we're not worried about that. We just have Jesus.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, if you compare, there isn't a comparison. If you try to, you know, the Larry Bird of basketball, well, there's Michael Jordan. You know, you know, pick a sport, pick a player, there's somebody else. The Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, there's others.
Yeah.
Not in Jesus. Joey, there really isn't anyone that has the name recognition. I mean, you never, ever hear Muhammad being presented like Jesus is.
Yeah, they don't quote Muhammad to try to get gay marriage passed or to prove that we should let all these people across the border for free.
No, it's never. It's Jesus, they're never concerned about what Muhammad, what his perspective would be. Now, why is that? If these are two individuals on par, one with another, both religious teachers having an impact on certain people, why don't we have a dueling match between the usage of each?
Yeah. Well, and if all roads lead to the same thing, why isn't each one as equally significant? You know, because when we were in Thailand, I was kept thinking to myself that this road is nothing like our road. I mean, it can't even be the same road. I mean, they're not doing anything close. They don't even have the idea of God that we... It's not even close to the idea of God. Their God doesn't really exist. Their God is becoming non-existent. That's what they seek to achieve. There's nothing similar to what we do in Christianity and what they do.
Right.
It's not even close. So you can't even make... I don't even think it's fair to make that argument.
So Jesus was a refugee. The man who heads the federal agency responsible for the... many of the 50,000 unaccompanied alien children from Central America who have entered the U.S. illegally in recent months told a conference on Tuesday that those working refugees should look to Jesus as a role model. How does he even get away with saying such a thing? That's really amazing. You can't pray in Jesus' name, but you can look to Jesus as a role model for handling refugees. Jesus was a refugee, and that's a very good reminder to all of us. Now, how was Jesus a refugee, Joey?
Well, I guess I was trying to think about this when I was reading the article, and I guess the two maybe approaches you could take would be he came from heaven to earth and became God incarnate, God in the flesh, and he would have been a refugee in that sense. And then possibly politically as a Israelite, a Jew living under Roman rule, but he was born in his own country. So in my mind, that takes that one away, and you would have to only apply the first
one. What about
one.
The trip as a baby to Egypt? Was he a refugee during that time when he was taken by mom and dad down there, maybe?
Yeah, that would be a possibility. Yeah, definitely.
In the case of all unaccompanied alien children, U.S. law requires that those who do not come from a contiguous country, as in Mexico or Canada, be transferred to the custody of the ORR, which is the Office of Refugee Resettlement, to be reunited with family or placed elsewhere until deputation proceedings can be completed. So, this is in particularly all these kids that are coming from countries like Honduras and below, right?
Yeah, anything below Mexico. And they're coming in, and the stat at the bottom is it's a 900, and the Unaccompanied Alien Children Program is a $912 million budget, and that's what President Obama just designated $2 billion more for. Nagesh told the people attending the conference hosted by USCCB's Migration and Refugee Services, Catholic Legal Immigration Network, and Catholic Charities USA that people working with refugees can only be successful and have a long impact on people when we actually start seeing ourselves as the people we want to serve. And I guess by that meaning, by doing good works and serving these people, we are serving ourselves. But I think the thing that we're missing is we're not really serving ourselves and we're not serving our children when we're spending $2 billion a year now toward kids who we're taking in that we don't really have any business taking in. And it sounds uncompassionate, and that's what you're accused of being, is an uncompassionate person. But the issue is we don't even have the money, so by bringing in these kids, we're forcing our own flesh and blood children to possibly become refugees one day themselves, not to mention we're breaking the law, not to mention these kids now are bringing in infectious diseases, and they have whole camps of kids on the border and parents who have infectious diseases that we're trying not to bring into the country because we just have this gaping hole down there that we're not really willing to do anything about.
Joey, I think this is a really difficult topic.
Yeah, because you sound harsh if you say you don't want these poor, underprivileged kids coming here.
Yeah, you sound unchristian.
But here's what happens. These kids, if they're not with their parents, and you can't reconcile their parents, they end up in an adoption or an orphan program and or the foster care program, and they're passed from house to house. In many cases, they're going to be beaten, molested, end up in a sex or slave trade. It's the same thing that happens in all these third world countries when people come from Cambodia or Laos and they get into Korea or China or Thailand because life is better there. But their family send them in. No one's there necessarily to take care of them. No one cares, and they end up becoming kidnapped or molested or raped or sold into slavery. And we can't account for all of them. We don't have the money to. We don't have the means to account for all of them. We can't know that we're placing them all with good families. So we don't really know if we're actually making every one of these kids' lives better.
I still think, Joey, it's a hard issue. You stare at this little 8-year-old, and he has no parents. What do you do with them?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is, you, from a biblical perspective, is you get them back to their parents.
Yeah, that's where they need to be. Because we don't know whose home we're placing them in. That's the issue. We don't know who we're going to place them with. We don't know. We know that a mom and dad generally is going to love their children better than I can love that child.
Okay, but the response that this guy's probably going to give us, Joey, is, if that mom and dad loved their kid, why did they send them packing to America?
Well, because they think it's a better life here for them. They think it's a better life, not recognizing all the perils that await when they come into this country. There's just as many ways to get messed up and abused and beaten here as there are in Guatemala. As crazy as it sounds. just as many bad things can happen to a kid here. Maybe not as much, but the opportunities are there.
So what is the solution to the problem?
Well, from a biblical perspective, it's to get people down to those countries and educate those parents and help make their lives better by preaching the gospel to them. If you want a biblical perspective, I mean,
do you think that America, from a biblical perspective, has the right to protect its borders?
From a biblical perspective, you're supposed to, from Romans 13, the government is supposed to be a terror to evil. And right now, by having these porous borders, we're not being a terror to evil. Because who knows who's coming into our country right now?
So you're calling these kids evil?
Well, they're not evil in of themselves, but the other people who are coming in with them may be evil. The adults who are coming in who are evil, and some of these kids are going to end up in gangs, become violent offenders, thieves, stealers. Let's just be honest. That's going to happen to at least some of them. They're not all going to come out and be model citizens.
I'm thinking through this in my mind, and I'm trying to you know, because Jesus is a refugee in the article, and so what would Jesus have us to do? And you've got Catholic charities involved in providing help to these children. So certainly there's a necessity to be compassionate. But at what point does a nation reconcile that with the fact that when I heard that the president asked for another billion, $2 billion, $3 billion, and I said to my wife, where's that coming from? There is no money.
Yeah.
What is that? He went to the Congress and he said, want some billions of dollars. And they said, well, we got a surplus over here that we don't want to have anything to do with. Sure, take it. No.
Yeah, the fact, you know, we're commanded to love our neighbor as ourselves. And our neighbor, as we said in our church, and many people would agree, is anybody that we can do good to. So we certainly have a responsibility to do good to other nations. The Israelites were called to be a light to the Gentiles. And I think by application, we have a responsibility as a nation to help people. But we are trying to help people when we can't even help ourselves. We're sending billions of dollars of aid to all these other countries, and we have major issues in our own country. Not to mention, you're enslaving a whole generation of American citizen children with debt that they're not going to be able to pay back. And at some point, it's going to hit the fan, and it's going to blow up. And I may not be here to see it. And you might not be here to see it, but our children and grandchildren will be here to suffer the consequences.
In the article, Nagash, who is the leader of this organization, right? He's the director of the Department of Health and Human Services, the Office of Refugee Resettlement. He says that people should be less concerned with funding and the mass influx of illegal aliens and concentrate on the people that he and others serve. So his suggestion is, forget about money.
Yeah.
Forget about the debt that we're under. Just concentrate on serving this people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, how do I do that? How do I forget about a budget and just spend money on them?
Yeah, because you can't do that. Because we, both of us, would love to give more money to our church and more money to our missionaries. We'd love to be able to do that. But we have a budget, and so we can't do that. We can't put our missions budget on an American Express card. That's
right.
Irresponsible. Anyone would say that.
Right. I can't just add another zero to the check and
say,
I'm not going to worry about my budget. I'm not going to worry about the checkbook balance. I want to focus more on the people. No, because my check will bounce.
Mm-hmm.
See, he doesn't seem to be concerned. Now, remember, this is a guy who manages your tax-paying dollars. That's what he does,
and he's living in La La Land. When you make a statement like that, it's hard to take you serious. Is your concern for these kids legitimate? Yes, we've established that. But is that statement at all what you want from someone who's probably making $200,000-$300,000 to run this program?
He says people should be less concerned with funding and the mass influx of illegal aliens and concentrate on the people that he and others serve. So, you know, that's like saying the manager at Walmart should not be concerned about the stealing and the theft that's happening. Doesn't need to be concerned with that. He just needs to focus on serving the customers. He doesn't need to be concerned about the sales or the lack thereof or the theft and the increase. He just needs to see that doesn't work.
Yeah, he just needs to worry about serving these people and giving them more. In the case of Walmart, paying them $15 an hour, not thinking that there's a bottom line, not thinking that there's going to be a whole nation of people who are going to be affected by the price increase who aren't getting a raise by paying people $15 an hour. So it's just irresponsible. And the logic doesn't seem to sink in. We're branded as harsh, mean-spirited. You know, that was why George Bush ran on 2000,
right.
Compassionate conservatism,
right, right.
Which he never got to impact because of because of 9/11. But that's where, you know, so we're branded as mean, hateful people. And in 2016, if it's Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio, that's what Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden or whoever they decide on is going to paint us as, because this is going to be the hot button issue. Again, that's what they're going to say. You guys are
right.
Uncompassionate. So the Republican response is starting to be, well, let's think like the Democrats
mm-hmm.
think.
Yep.
And the only problem with that is you don't have the money or the manpower to police this.
Right. Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be any concern with shutting down the borders so that we don't have to continue to battle this problem.
Yeah. And if there were American families, legitimate American families that we've done background checks on, and that we screened, and we knew that they could adopt these children and take them into their home and love them and give them a good education and provide for them, then it might be a whole other, but there's no one down there doing that. There's no one down there with arms open saying, I'm going to bring you into my home.
Right.
And we're not adopting the way that we should be adopting. We don't adopt children.
One of the reasons we don't adopt children the way we should, Joey, is the cost.
Yeah, the cost and the unbelievable amount of red tape from any country that it is to adopt a kid.
$30,000, $40,000. Families in our church in debt because of an adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And not because of the financial burden that the actual child is creating by the fifth meal, mouth to feed or an additional clothing to buy. No, it's the upfront cost mm-hmm. to adopt the child because of the layers of bureaucracy.
Yeah, you have to fly over in these countries sometimes two or three times just to figure out if you can even get the child. The line is cut off, but I pulled it up on my phone. It says, so I believe it's very, very important we do that self-examination and do it quickly and see ourselves with the people we want to serve, said Nagesh, who fled his native Ethiopia into Sudan in 1980 after a Soviet-backed military coup. Yes, I was once described as an alien myself, if that's a proper term to use. And in a welcoming letter in the conference program, Cardinal Donald Worrell, Archbishop of Washington, wrote about people in the shadows and margins of our communities.
So these illegal aliens are supposed to be the equivalent of the shadows and margins of our communities? This is the shadows and margins of our communities who have cell phones, iPhones, flat screen televisions, mm-hmm. drive cars, walk around in $150 Jordans. I mean, face it, the shadows of our community is not too bad.
No, it's not. And if you haven't taken a trip abroad, take a trip abroad.
And it'll change your entire perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that these kids coming across don't have the life in Honduras or Guatemala that we have in America. But this is what we think. Another thing we think is, well, that's what they need. They need more money. They need nicer clothes. They need better shoes. And they need to be able to sip $5 lattes and eat $7 hamburger meals. And their lives will be happier and have unprecedented amounts of entertainment flowing into their brains, and we think that's what they need. But that's not what they need. That's not at all what they need. They need an education. That's important. We have that. They need to be able to read. But they don't need the American dream. They don't need that pushed into their heads. We don't need another generation of kids who say, give it to me now, it's what I deserve. We don't need that. And that's what's going to happen with a lot of these kids. And that's one of the reasons why it's happening. Because the Democrats will be the people who let us come across, and when we finally get registered to vote, or whether we get registered to vote legally or not, we're going to vote for those guys. And so basically it's a political ploy to stay in office.
Hmm. Wow. That's a pretty strong statement to make.
It is, but that's what's happening, because all the Hispanics are going to say, well, they let our people in, so we're going to vote for them.
In our world today, we are challenged by the complex and multifaceted social phenomena of migration, in which many who are looking for a better life find themselves instead of consigned to the shadows and margins of our communities. In addition, the number of refugees forced to flee oppressive conditions in their homeland is substantial, and the degradation of human trafficking cannot be overstated. So I don't think that we want anyone in this podcast to think that we're not aware of the fact that life stinks in many of these countries.
It does.
The question becomes, to what degree must American exceptionalism change such that there isn't a difference between us and everyone else?
Yeah.
Do we as a nation need to continue to become socialistic in our orientation, deeper in debt, financially upside down, so that basically we become just as depraved as a country as every other country on the planet?
Sure, because there's going to come a day, if we continue on the path we're on, where people are going to leave, and they're going to go somewhere else where they can make a better living. Your dollar's not going to be worth what it was once when you travel abroad. And so you're going to go somewhere else where your money's worth more, where you have more opportunity. You're going to go to Finland, who has one of the best education systems in the world. Or you're going to go down to Chile, that has one of the more conservative governments.
Right.
That's not running a deficit.
Right.
You know, there's a reason people are moving to southern states and conservative states. That's why if you look at the list of top 10 states that people are moving to, I think like 9 out of 10 of them have a Republican governor. Because there's low taxes there. Hmm. People want to keep more of their money.
Right.
So they can invest it in college, so they can have a nicer house, so they can put it back into their business. They can give more.
But this author here, this leader of this organization says that we as American citizens do not need to be concerned about that. Don't worry about the price. Don't worry about the budget. Don't worry about funding. Just provide for these kids. And I understand that. I understand that. I'm just trying to reconcile the stewardship of money with the need here in this situation. And I don't see them, I don't see this easily reconciled. I see it as very difficult. Thus, we ought to close the borders so that we don't have to continue to deal with this problem.
Yes, yeah. And there's ways for us to get humanitarian aid to these people. Cheaper, probably, and without having them become a burden on us. And he talks about human trafficking. That's a really big issue. But some of the numbers say, according to the Polaris Project, 41% of human trafficking cases that are being reported, 41% that are being reported to this organization are American citizens.
Wow.
So that this is an issue that is not, that we have to deal with this. You can go to any city, big city in the United States, and there's a human trafficking issue. There was a couple in our church, people who lived across the street from them were arrested for human trafficking in a nice, decent neighborhood.
Mm.
So we pretend like this is not an American thing, but this is an American, this is an issue in our own country.
So he says, in addition, the number of refugees forced to flee oppressive conditions in their homeland is substantial, and the degradation of human trafficking cannot be overstated. And he seems to suggest that this is really only outside of America. And the point you're making, Joey, is we've got there our own internal issues that we need to be focused on.
And I want to make a point here. If this guy who works for the president, Obama, is so concerned, if they're so concerned about human trafficking, why in the world did the president refuse to let Louis Giglio pray at his 2012 inauguration just because one time, 30 years ago, he preached a sermon on gay marriage when the guy has devoted his ministry to raising awareness of human trafficking inside the United States? And yet, we weren't going to let that guy have a platform because of one time, and probably not enough if you're preaching expositorily.
He
preached on gay marriage, so all the other good things that he's done for human trafficking are to be to raise awareness about human trafficking are not relevant. And yet we say that's what we care about. And this is a guy who's maybe done more than any organization in the country on the issue.
The four-day conference features a wide range of immigrant-related workshops and an advocacy day when participants will meet with members of Congress. Okay, so that's the end of the article, right?
Yep, that's it.
And so these children are all over the United States. And I think it's important to go on the record and say, like I saw in California, Joey, where they were blocking the roads from the buses mm-hmm. coming down and they were keeping them out of the city. And we saw American citizens spitting on people. You know, no matter how passionate you are about any particular issue, you know, it's never acceptable to be spitting on somebody. You know, you have a liberty in Christ to protest a government decision in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we've been granted by the governing authorities freedom of speech.
Yep.
So the governing authority gave me freedom of speech. So I have, within my understanding my responsibility to obey the governing authorities, yet the governing authorities will grant me opportunities to protest within boundaries, but I'm never allowed to cross the line to where I'm not kind.
Yeah, you can't be abusive, rude, mean. You have people who get on Facebook and call the president an idiot. Okay, the guy is not an idiot.
Right, that is absurd to suggest. You don't become the president of the United States because you're an idiot.
But it also makes you sound mean-spirited,
yes,
stupid, and unloving, and then they say, well, you're not loving like Jesus, and now you're a hypocrite. So we have to be very, we're very, and if you're one of these people who can't get involved in these issues without losing your temper and without losing your control, then maybe you should just, mm-hmm, it's the same way for,
right,
the guy who can't stop from losing his temper in a church softball game. Don't play church softball.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Stay,
right,
away from the issue if you can't handle yourself properly.
Absolutely. And if you know that you're going to go down to this protest and at that protest you're going to end up spitting in a Hispanic's face who was created in the image of God, mm-hmm, for whom somebody Christ died for, then we would suggest that you have no business being there.
Yeah, exactly right.
Right. And I would say that during the time that the refugees are in our country, we ought to go overboard with doing our best to provide for them food and clothing and safety and shelter and those things. But that doesn't mean, from my perspective, I may be corrected from the Word of God, I'd love to see it, that any nation state has a responsibility of accepting into its flock, so to speak, anyone, to the point at which the nation state can no longer do the God-ordained responsibilities. And those are to be a terror to those that would do evil and to reward good. That's essentially what the Bible says. So if America is so broke financially that it can no longer defend its borders or punish evildoers because we can't employ cops or we can't, then we have to figure out to... There's a line that has to be drawn,
yeah,
from a biblical perspective, mm-hmm, because the primary responsibility of the government is not to provide food for refugees.
Yeah, it's to provide protection. And we're cutting our military budget. People who we could put on the borders to help,
mm-hmm,
with this,
mm-hmm,
issue,
mm-hmm,
and they're spread thin all over the world. I looked the other day, we have bases in like 25 different countries.
Right.
And I question, do we need bases in all 25 of those countries? Because some of those guys, can we bring home, put them back in America where they're spending money in America and going back into the economy, and put them on the borders and help protect our borders? Certainly we could do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, those are our thoughts. It's a difficult issue. We don't want to see an 8-year-old abused. We don't want to see a 7-year-old treated unkindly. And yet, at the same time, it seems as though we as a nation have a right and a responsibility to do what is fiscally sound for the preservation of the nation. And I would say that one of the reasons why we may want to preserve the nation is because of the freedom we have to preach the gospel. If it was a nation state, an Islamic nation state, then I would not feel, as a Christian living there, any compulsion to sustain the existence of a nation state that is persecuting Christians.
Exactly.
And again, I would give to anyone, Joey, the freedom to disagree with me on that position, because I know I'm out there on the edge of the diving board on that position, trying to understand this balance between the corporate integrity of a nation state and the responsibility to love my neighbor as myself. And I don't see them as easy to reconcile.
Yeah, but two wrongs don't make a right. So, and that's kind of where we're at now. And like we can't sustain what we're doing. If we really believe that this place is so awesome,
mm-hmm,
then we have to change how we spend our money and how we protect ourselves.
Right. All right, thanks for listening. Have a great day.